Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize it is broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, one that I love, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder. What brand do you remember as a child having the first impact on you? What's the first brand you kind of remember wanting or loving or buying?
Pringles.
Really?
I'll tell you why. Growing up in Brazil on a dictatorship, those products didn't exist. And to travel abroad was super hard. So the number one treat that you could get from someone, which is like no one, that would travel abroad to the US was a can of Pringles. And that was magic.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. Today on my podcast is Eduardo Lutz. He's a Brazilian and he's had experience with some of the most iconic brand companies in the world, Accenture, AB InBev, Kraft Heinz, and Unilever. Eduardo's lessons are timeless about the impact a leader can make through the brands that his company is marketing. Here's my conversation with Eduardo Lutz. So Eduardo, welcome to the CMO Podcast.
Thanks, Jim.
So before we get into things, I understand you're an athlete, right? Beach volleyball, water polo.
Long time ago.
So in addition to being a CMO, you're an athlete.
Right.
So tell me your greatest athletic experience of all time. Like, did you ever play a famous player or beat a famous player or come from behind on a heroic win or loss or whatever?
Well, my bar is really low. I mean, heroics are like, I was selected to the Brazilian water polo national team.
That's fantastic.
There were like
Come on.
There are five people who play water polo in Brazil. I was probably one of them. That's it. That, I guess, is my number one, you know, claim of fame in sports.
So how old were you when that happened?
I was 18, 19.
Wow. Do you still play?
No. Water polo, either you play or you don't play. Yeah. There is nothing.
So what do you do now? Do you do tennis?
I do tennis. Running? I do tennis, yeah. I try to do tennis on the weekends, yeah.
Yeah. Anything in the gym?
Not really.
Not really. Okay.
Yeah.
So how good are you numerically on tennis? Are you 4-5, 5-0, 3.5?
I started as a 3-5. I moved to a 4-5 last year. Yeah. I'm getting better. But, you know, my kid, he's 11. He's already beating me.
He's going to be good.
Well, or I'm really bad.
Not so good. Right. So anyway, let's get back to the CMO stuff. You worked at Unilever?
Yes.
AB InBev?
Yes.
Accenture?
Yeah.
And now Kraft Heinz.
Right.
So I want you to tell me your family's favorite brand from all those, not Accenture, your family's favorite brand from those three brand companies.
Look,
so Unilever, favorite brand for your family?
Dove.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nothing beats Dove, especially the Real Women thing, which is super cool that those guys created a long time ago. It's still resonating. Yeah, there's a great job there.
15 years into it, it's still working.
Right. For Kraft Heinz, nothing beats ketchup. You're the coolest dad if you're the dad who makes ketchup, which, you know, apparently who I am for my kids. So yeah, Heinz ketchup.
Yeah, just basic Heinz ketchup?
Yeah, organic.
Organic, okay.
Yeah.
Super. So AB InBev, your kids are a bit young, but how about you?
Stella Artois.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too, that's my favorite. I have the chalice.
Right, it's beautiful.
The only way to drink it.
Right.
Yeah, super. So could you tell us, so we get to know you a bit better, is there something about you that's not online? Something that no one knows about, really?
There are a lot of things that are not online. Thank God, right?
That's good, right? Yeah.
I didn't speak English until I was like 22, 23. Oh, I still don't. You see, this is a broken version of English.
You're doing great.
Come from Rio, from a very humble family there. My parents still live there in Rio. I have a sister who lives there. So I grew up in Brazil, in Rio, when it was a very different country. It was a dictatorship in Brazil in the 80s, which is crazy to think about it, but that was reality there. And life changed a lot since 20, 30 years.
So fast forward here, you're now the CMO of one of the great companies of the world. You have been the CMO of one of the great companies of the world. You've worked for other storied companies like Unilever, AB InBev. How'd that happen? How'd you get from, the family you grew up in to these amazing roles? What were the milestones?
I believe in hard work, of course, but there is I really believe in chance. You meet people, you get along with people, you see opportunities sometimes, and you jump. I didn't plan any of this. Growing up as a kid in Rio in the 80s, 70s, 80s, I would never think about, be living abroad and, raising a family outside of my country.
What did you want to do back then as a kid? Did you even think about it?
My mother wanted me to join the Brazilian Navy.
Why? You play water polo,
which is
not
exactly the most, probably the most powerhouse Navy in the world. It's crazy. And nothing was planned. It's just chance and work.
So from university, you went where? What was your first job?
I went to work for an American consulting firm called Accenture. Yeah. It was the best job I could find in Rio by the time. And the promise was that you would be exposed to, things outside of Brazil, which was exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And after that, I went to business school, came back, joined a beer company. Very grateful for that. Then joined Unilever to run their personal care division in Brazil. And then Kraft Heinz.
Yeah, fantastic. So if you think back on your career, starting with Accenture out of university, could you just tell me what's the most important thing you learned at each of those companies that helped you in the next assignment, starting with Accenture and going forward?
Yeah, when you are a management consultant, I think the key thing is to think on an organized way, five whys, and try to be, going to the root of issues to try to help a client, right? That's what consultants, mm-hmm. good consultants try to do, right? And that helps because you create a mind that continues to interrogate things and try to get to the bottom of things or root causes, mm-hmm. whatever, right? Then when I moved
what was your most amazing client in your time at Accenture? Can you remember?
I worked in a lot of retailing projects.
In Brazil.
In Brazil, yeah. in the UK. Mm-hmm. I work on the beer company before joining them, and they're an amazing company. It was a Brazilian company back then and then became international. What those guys did to really become a global force on a big category.
The AB InBev team.
Right. Yeah. Coming from Brazil is incredible, right? Hats off to those guys. Yeah, I think when you go to the industry side, right, and you're really running something, then I think the most important thing is how you interrogate the consumer behavior, right? Which, as you know, is tricky. Mm-hmm. People say one thing and do another. And people, obviously, you have to be really nuanced in terms of how you ask people questions because, they don't care about, ketchup, mac and cheese, whatever, right? It's a split second decision every, other week. So you have to really try to be deep into their circumstances, the way we call it at Kraft Heinz, and try to understand pain points. And
you call it secret senses?
We call it the consumer pain points, which is how people behave and how they choose to live their lives and their circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that's a fascinating body of work because, when you're really thinking about that, it's a Jobs approach, right? You have to go deep to unlock insights. And sometimes, people will say something that they're completely sure about. And when you see the data, when you see what they are doing really in their lives, their homes or at work, it's completely different. And then they just don't realize that. And to me, that's the most fascinating part of being on a consumer-facing industry.
Mm-hmm. So When the U.S. government had their shutdown,
right,
your company did something pretty amazing. I'm still kind of blown away by it. So could you tell us about that? And actually, more importantly, how you made that decision, which I thought was bold, courageous, purpose-driven. So could you tell us a bit about that and the backstory behind it, what others could learn from that?
Sure. The story is this. We you know, we have 200 brands, and the number one brand that we have size-wise is Kraft. Kraft the brand, not Kraft the company. Mm-hmm. And Kraft is a brand with broad shoulders, a lot of categories, things like that. And we had been thinking since we consolidated the brand into a master brand approach back in October last year. What is really the reason for the Kraft brand to exist and be relevant on people's lives? What's the purpose of this brand? And we work with our agency for Kraft, which is a Leo in Chicago, right?
Leo Burnett. Yeah.
Yeah. And we landed in a place which is interesting, which is, Kraft exists to provide parents with moments of release when they're in stressful situations, especially with their kids. I like this construct because it's not far away from what the Kraft products are. Melting cheese, mac and cheese, salad dressing, ranch, etc., right? And we were very happy with this construct back in December and ready to deploy that thinking into the world, right? In terms of campaigns and, mm-hmm. even informing the innovation pipeline, et cetera. And then, to your point, the federal government shut down. And at first, we were kind of watching the news, but it never occurred to us that we could have any involvement with that, right? But then something special happened. We have a process with Leo for Kraft and we created that in January this year. Every Friday, we have 1 hour in our agendas where they come and pitch ideas to us.
Fantastic. Every Friday, Leo Burnett comes over and pitches ideas.
Every Friday. And based on the brief that has 7 words, which is the reason for Kraft to exist. So whatever idea you have.
So it has to be on purpose, right? It has to be on the brand's purpose.
Right. The brief is 7 words. Yeah. Nothing more than that. And our ask to Leo in that case is bring any idea. Doesn't matter the medium that you're going to use. Doesn't matter the budget. Doesn't matter anything. Bring explosive ideas. And then they brought this idea of hey, guys, there's a government shutdown. If Kraft is about releasing moments of stress for parents, it's very hard to beat not having a paycheck as a moment of stress. So Kraft should have a say on this. And we said, no, of course, makes sense. Which kind of say? And they were, what about we open a grocery store in D.C., which is, the center of the federal workers' contingency there. And that in that grocery store, if you are a federal worker, you show up, you can grab a bag of groceries and go home without paying. And if you want later, when you have your paycheck back, you can donate to charity, whatever. So they pitched this idea on a Friday afternoon. On Wednesday, the next Wednesday, the store was open.
Wow.
In D.C.
What did you call the store?
Kraft Now, Pay Later. Hmm. And then something magic happened because we saw that people really appreciated that. And then we invited other brands, competing brands, just to join us. Hmm. And a lot of people showed up, Tropicana, Coke, AG&M because it was cold in February and January, and for gloves with people on the lines, etc. So it was very cool in that sense. And then 10 days later, what we did is we doubled down the commitment. We said, look, we don't know how long this shutdown will gonna last. It was kind of extending, and we say, look, how long it lasts, we'll keep the store open. Period. Right. If it's 6 months, it's going to be 6 months. What I like about this is it's a principle that to me is important on like modern brand building, which is brands expressing themselves, their values, beyond just communications. And we call that beyond just commerce. Mm-hmm. We didn't expect anything there. It's just a brand has to have a point of view about stuff based on its own set of values. And I think that's powerful. You know, and I think that's the only way I can think of on how to revive sometimes dusty legacy brands. And we try to do that across the company.
So what was the impact of that amazing idea that you executed very quickly? What was the impact on that inside your company?
People are proud, Jim. People are proud because it's funny. Every time you show up on a legit way, right? Not asking anything in return, not asking for a tap on the back to say, hey, self-congratulatory thing, etc. You just do something that's legit and good. People get proud, right? So the amount of pride in the company behind this Craft Now, Pay Later was incredible. The letters that we received from consumers and people out there, it's incredible. I mean, it's just, it's a definition of brand love. People appreciating a gesture, say, hey, this was well done. Thank you. You touched my family. You touched people that I know. And it's just cool.
Yeah. So you have this ritual where Leo Burnett comes every Friday to pitch ideas. Do you have other rituals in your company or in your experience as a leader to get ideas, creativity flowing, business ideas, anything else that we could learn from?
Right. No, we have a bunch. With those guys at Vayner, the ritual is different, right? The ritual is you guys have an open channel with us. So there is no emails, no even calls. It's just text messaging, and based on open briefs. And
so your brief to VaynerMedia is the same.
Same. Like short
the purpose, right?
Purpose, etc. Right. And those guys will. I mean, in terms of how they hustle is really unique. And we keep approving work via text message. So no chains of command, nobody has to call me or anything like that. If it makes sense and if it's on brand, do it, right? And to me, it's nice because, of course, it's fast and you deploy things fast. But I think it creates a level of accountability and empowerment to the team that I think is special. Because the brand managers, people managing those brands, they know that they are really in charge. And that's massive. And they know that when things go wrong, because they tend to sometimes, nobody's going to, you know, blame them or say, hey, who did this? Or, you know, who was responsible for this? No. You guys are empowered. We accept that sometimes things will backfire. That's part of life. Mm-hmm. If it does, be honest and you have to apologize, just apologize and move on and learn. This kind of ritual, I think, not only the, you know, the hustle of, you know, text messages, but the empowerment of people and the culture of not of avoiding blame, right? I think that's a real unlock for good work.
So who has inspired you, you know, as you were going through your career to come up with ideas like this? So what kind of leaders have you worked for or admired from afar that give you inspiration to do the kinds of things you do with these creative rituals, motivating your teams, getting the best ideas from your partners?
Right. It's a good question. I don't know. I tend to think of, sometimes historical characters like, you know, people like, I don't want to sound fancy, but, you know, Churchill, Lincoln, people who led, you know, on times of crisis and how they behaved with their people. And how they were decisive and had to be mentally organized and mobilizing, in their case, of course, you know, the thousands of people, right? I think those principles of leadership, they really translate well when you're managing a company, managing a large team, etc., right? You need to be super clear about where you want to take it, how you want to interact with people, and how you want to, you know, to deal with situations and establish a backbone of rituals, again, that keep things together, right? I have seen that. I have seen companies who don't have that kind of backbone. And I think it's tough because you don't have a working, process that you have to rely, that you can rely on. You have, everything is ad hoc. Everything is, you have to wait for the phone to ring or something to happen for you to react.
It's hard to scale without it, right? To train people, to approach the market in a common way.
Exactly. That's one thing. The other thing is, the other inspiration is, you see principle-based companies out there who are very explicit about their principles and the way they want to operate. For instance, Netflix comes to mind, right? You go online, you see their, culture manifesto, et cetera. I think that's powerful because you try to put on paper what you stand for. And when you do that, as with a brand purpose, right, it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. So, some people say, this is great, this is for me. Some people say, no, this is not for me. But that's powerful because for people who espouse it and embrace it, it's very clear what the company or the choices that they made, right? Mm-hmm. So we try to do to get inspired by that, and we published our own version of our 10 principles for brand building, and we put out there. We just published, not only internally but also externally, so that people like agency partners, outside candidates, to say, hey, this is how those guys think about brand building. I may disagree. Maybe it's not good thinking, but at least I know what they stand for.
Right.
And it helps. That helps everybody.
Yeah. What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMO succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. So let me go back to your career path again. We talked a bit about Accenture and management consulting. Mm-hmm. If you think about Unilever and AB InBev, kind of what's one word or one description of your experience there that helped you build the kind of leader you are today?
I always believed, Jim, that leaders should be leading from the front. I always believe that. The best people I have seen in action, CEOs, CMOs, senior people, the best ones are the ones who are really out there instead of being on an ivory tower or locked in an office, out there with consumers, out there with teams, walking the streets, seeing what's happening firsthand. We call it managing by walking around.
Sure.
That principle, I think, is stuck with me, and I really believe on that. The second one, I think, is important, but is not applied every time in companies, which is meritocracy. Mm. I mean, if we can find a way to let the best people who contribute the most progress faster or get the better opportunities, right? Everybody wins. The third one is ownership, right? Ownership is very, very much a center of our culture, the way we do things, where the empowerment comes from, et cetera, right? But the ownership is also to live with the consequences of your decisions. So, let's assume that sometimes things will go wrong. As an owner, you live with that and you find a way to, to learn and overcome and get better, instead of just, pray or run.
Sure.
And so those three principles, to me, are very important.
Let me give you a short story. We have a son who is in business school now at Ross, Michigan.
Right.
And he's decided on management consulting as his career. But he interviewed the CPG companies, and I asked him about that. And the one that stood out was Kraft Heinz. And I said, why? He said, I love their meritocracy.
Right.
And their approach that if you get results and get stuff done, you can move quickly and you can be decisive.
Right.
So it's coming through.
Thank you. No, it's good to hear. Look, the team that became the center of the business that I run there, grocery, right? Everything that's center of store. We found those guys in Pittsburgh in 2013. Mm-hmm. And some of them were like analysts. Now they're VPs 6 years later, right? And this is just the center of our philosophy in terms of managing people, right? The best will go faster, as it should be.
Yeah. So you've had a great career path all the way up through Kraft Heinz. You ran the grocery business, and then you were CMO for a while.
Right.
So tell me what it's like to be a CMO of a large company like that. Did you feel prepared? Is the work different? What's a good day? What's a bad day?
Yeah. Prepare for sure not, right? I think it's learning every day, right? A good day is where you see the principles that we're trying to create in action. Especially when you're not involved. I think that's important, right? You know, you don't have to be there personally. But people are saying, yeah, I'm doing that, and that's the logic, and it aligns back to such and such principle. When you see that happen, it's special. Because it means that whatever you're doing culture-wise and ways of working-wise is just permeating, right? I give an example. We have a little brand called Country Time Lemonade.
Sure.
It's powdered lemonade. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly on trend, as you can imagine, in this day and age, right? And the brand was going down forever, you know, center of store, kind of boring, etc. But the team there understood this principle of brands with a sense of purpose and a set of values manifesting themselves beyond commerce, which is our principle number one on the 10 principles. And they were thinking about how to express that and, you know, no budget, what we do, right? And then three kids in Denver last year were busted. The lemonade stands were busted because they didn't have permits by the police. Three kids.
Wow.
So the team heard that and said, do you know what? This is not right. And do you know what? Country Time Lemonade needs to have a say on this. So Country Time Lemonade creates something called Legal Aid, which is a fund
for kids.
To pay their fines if they were busted by police, etc. We did that, and it became a sensation. I mean, the 2 billion impressions for Country Town Lemonade, really, it's something.
Huge. Yeah.
And then something else happened. Denver, where that busting happened, changed their laws to allow kids to operate lemonade stands without a permit. And after they did that sequentially, other cities in the U.S. are changing their laws to do that. And every time it happens, Country Town Lemonade is there as a, you know, someone that's enabling this. So this is magic, right? When it happens this way. The team did that by themselves. They didn't have to consult anyone. It made sense. They found a purpose that resonated in culture, beyond commerce, and they jumped, right? The interesting thing is, you know, before they went out, the only reason why they call someone like me is because they need clearance from legal.
From your legal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because legal was saying, and with completely fair, say, guys, this is kind of a moral hazard situation. You know, you're kind of incentivizing people to break the law, aren't you? Yeah, maybe. But come on, it's kids, yeah. Lemonade, etc. And then I think that's where senior leadership plays a role to remove barriers for people to do their things. Mm-hmm. Of course, it makes sense from my integrity perspective. I think in that case it did. And it's just magic when it happens. When you see people leaving those principles by themselves, that's a good day for a CMO. Yeah.
And then had to be good for the brand too, right?
Look,
maybe you don't see it in overnight sales, but
look, the results for the brand
put you in the culture of the conversation.
Was incredible. Fantastic results. We joke that we put everything on legal aid, you know, it turned around the brand, but you know, it is what it is. We'll take it.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's talk a little bit more about how you stay fresh, how you stay creative, how you stay full of ideas, energetic. Do you have rituals we could learn from, you know, personally? Do you get up early and exercise? Do you get up early and read?
Right.
You know, do you save your most interesting thinking time until late in the day, early in the day?
Right. I'm an early bird. I wake up really early, like before 5. And I take this time before the phone call starts just to read and listen. Like podcast is an amazing source of information these days. So I have like, you know, 15, 20 that I, on my roster that I just listen every day that helps.
Can you think of any of your favorites now on the spot?
Yeah, a couple of them, right? Some very, very nerdy ones like Exponent, which is about, you know, economics of aggregators, which is super cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, is a guy in Taiwan and a guy in Australia talking for 1 hour about economic theory on in aggregation theory. I learned a lot there.
Sure.
Podcast about brands, podcasts about, you know, people starting companies. Mm-hmm. Those are the good ones, right? I think it's important to be a student of history, not only for brands but in general, because usually things tend to kind of repeat themselves just in a different context. So I think it helps if you are informed. I think you have to spend time on social media these days. I try to do that. It's not my nature, but I try to be, Reddit, Barstools, even like corporate things like LinkedIn these days are so rich, that helps. And I think we have to be open. It's amazing amount of insights that you get just listening to people carefully. You go to a party, you see how people behave with, products and what mom says and dad says and kid says. Those things are important, right? To me, when brands can associate themselves, their message, with culture, and what we say is timely in culture, when they can be timely in culture, is super powerful. I'll give a concrete example. We on this logic of continually listening to what's happening. We are launching last year Heinz Mayo in the U.S. It's a big category.
I remember.
Right? And the team was launching in a traditional way, but they were dissatisfied with their approach, but they didn't know what to do differently, right? In terms of how do we connect this in culture, really? I mean, mayo is not really interesting. How do we do that? And one day, they listening on socially, right? There was a huge debate raving in the Middle East about condiment mashups. How you mix X with Z, created the, how is it called here? But it was on fire. It's such a silly thing, right? And then the team in the US understood that debate. In 3 hours, Jim, they launched one tweet saying, Americans, if you want to see ketchup and mayo together, we'll do it and we'll call it MayoChup. We just need 500,000 votes on Twitter, which is sound like a lot.
Yeah.
So one tweet launched this campaign. We had almost 3 million votes. I mean, people were like, we didn't know any of that. It was just like a huge debate about those mashups and how it is called in Utah and in Florida and in the Latin community and blah. And people got very pissed with us that we are kind of imitating their childhood thing and, in Utah it's called fry sauce, so on and so forth. So we got, and this thing took a life of its own, went to Good Morning America, things like that. We got 5 billion impressions.
Amazing.
Out of that with one tweet. Walmart and other customers called us and said, hey, can you launch this now? And then the R&D folks called the marketing and said, hey, we don't know how to do this because, tomatoes and mayo, they kind of separate. So they had to find a way to do that to begin with. In 4 months, our customers, including Walmart, which never does that, they changed their reset times to launch this thing called MayoChup. And MayoChup was the number one innovation, not for Kraft Heinz, for the whole sauces and condiments category in the U.S. last year.
Crazy. Out of one tweet. You launched within 4 months of that tweet.
4 months. It was on the shelves at Walmart.
That's amazing.
It's amazing internally
to move that fast.
Right. The point is this. It could have been nothing, but I think the spirit of saying, I'm listening,
right,
I'm humble, I'll try this, and see what happens and pivot away, as we go. I think in these days for brands, I think it's fundamental. Yeah.
So someday when you're playing beach volleyball and water polo and tennis with more of your time and not working as much toward the end of your career,
right,
what do you hope people say about you that it worked for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. That I did the right things with my teams, and together we did something special. We took something from A to Z, and this thing had a legacy, something that there was a less impact somewhere on consumers, on teams, on companies. If that happens, or a fraction of that, it would be a good final chapter, I guess.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. So, Eduardo, we've talked a lot today about brands that build trust. What you did with Kraft during the government shutdown, And so many of your brands are trusted because of their behavior over time. So what about brands that are not trusted or lose trust suddenly? You know, certainly Facebook is in the middle of that right now and all of the privacy issues and the platform as a means to cultivate ideas that are not so good. So what's your advice to companies that lose trust, brands that lose trust? How do they rebuild it? It's not easy. We don't have a lot of examples of companies that have done that really well. The banks have certainly tried
right
since the financial crisis. Some have done better than others. But do you have any examples? Do you have any advice?
Look, I don't have advice. I wish I knew, right? What I think is I would say common sense, right? You have to be true to your principles. You have to walk the talk. And you have to be honest at all times. And yes, if a misstep happens, and it happens in human nature sometimes, right? You have to understand that it is what it is. It takes time to repair, right? And then you have to overtly communicate back to your values, back to your actions that support those values. I don't think there's a magical, you know, recipe anywhere. I just think it's consistency. And that's the concern with reputation. The moment you get it hurt or misstepped, it's super tough to win trust back, right? That's why we tell our people, reputation takes years to build and 1 second to destroy. That's why we try to be so careful selecting the people who will be the stewards of our brands because they have this responsibility, right? Not only for the company, but also for individual brands. And that's a very key component, I think.
Eduardo, you've worked on some of the greatest brands in the world in your career path. So what do you think are the drivers of brand loyalty? It's hard these days, right?
Yeah.
The Amazon effect, et cetera, et cetera. So what's been your experience in creating a brand that has, as we call it in the industry, a high share of requirements?
Right, exactly. Right?
Which means people, in terms of all their category use, use that brand the most.
Right. Look, I wish I knew, right? But what because I would repeat that 200 times of all the brands that we have. A couple of things. I think consistency is important. You know, I believe in a kind of funnel, starting from, you know, we have to be aware of something to begin with. Because if you are unaware, you have no chance. And then you're aware of something, and this something, this brand, has a clear enough promise that you say, okay, let me give a chance to this brand. And if that promise is fulfilled, whatever it is, could be something tangible or intangible, could be product performance, could be what the brand stands for, could be more intangible, right? I think over time, if that promise is consistently kept and your expectation is consistently surpassed by whatever the brand is doing, that creates a cycle of love and trust. Frankly, a major concern that I have, that we have strategically, is that we're seeing the transfer of this sentiment more and more from brands to the channel. Because the channels, right, and you know, kudos to those guys, Amazons and Walmarts of the world, they're doing such a great job fulfilling that promise in a way that is really amazing. I mean, one day Prime, it's amazing. You know, I'll pay probably 5 times more than I pay to get that, right? So there's a huge fulfilled and surpassed promise that I think over time generates devotion, generates loyalty, generates share of requirements, right? But for sure, these things take time and consistency to get there. Now, Heinz is a 150-year-old brand this year, and we're celebrating the anniversary of the brand this year globally. And yeah, you know, took a lot of time, but people are there, right? And it's a brand that over time did very little missteps in terms of the basic promise of the brand, quality and otherwise. And that's important. So there's all this positive baggage there.
And Heinz must be one of your brands in the category that has, in your company, that has the most loyalty.
Yeah, it is one of the most, yes.
So I want to sort of get to the end of our interview here by asking you some sort of lightning round questions.
Right.
So the book that's had its biggest impact on you? It's a tough question.
I would say Churchill's biographies. Actually, the best one, at least in my opinion, that was just launched end of last year.
Yeah, the new one.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
What a life. Gums, Germs, and Steel. Nothing to do with branding, but I think it's just the way the world shaped up to be. Those broad questions. I think this is a great book. I really like the Principles book about
Dalio.
Dalio and a bunch of them.
Yeah, sure. So, do you watch series? Is there anything on Amazon Prime or Netflix that you love right now?
Very much. Well, Game of Thrones is the final season. Everybody's there.
You too, right?
I have to convince my wife. She refuses. And Billions is so fun. Billions is so fun now.
So, favorite Super Bowl ad that you ever made?
No, that's easy. I made just four. So I love all of them. But I think Winter Stampede with the little dogs across the field was magic. And I'll tell you, the people who did that, David Miami, the agency, and Jessica Ryan and Michel Saint-Jacques, the people leading the project there, they should be very proud, because when those guys brought the idea. The idea seemed really, really stupid. Okay, let's dress, winner dogs as hot dogs. And they will just, approach a family of condiments on an open field. It's not exactly something that you can test, right?
So how'd they present that idea? They just said it like that?
Yeah. And then what, you try to test and see what is going to happen. But in the end of the day, gut... It's a huge component. And we trusted the vision that the David guys had, and I still do. We just did a devour with them on the Super Bowl. But the funny thing is we went to South Africa to shoot that thing. And when the dogs run across the field, it was like a second. Then we said, my goodness, how this thing's going to work? But then they put the magic, right? The super slow-mo. And they, the CGI with, 1,000 dogs and all that. And the funny story about that is the angle of that commercial was originally more like a battlefield kind of vibe with the music. Mm-hmm. Last minute, everything was filmed. We listened to that music, that song that ended up on the commercial that changed the whole story. Because instead of a battlefield, it became a love story. And those things
are
just...
better metaphor, right?
And those things are just, it's not science. This is more...
It's creativity.
Creativity, right? And they had to respect that.
Yeah. So what's your favorite Super Bowl ad that you didn't make? Your favorite Super Bowl ad of all time?
A couple. I think the Tide ad, it's a Tide ad. I think it's brilliant.
The meta
aspect of that, I think is incredible. The Budweiser ones from the 80s are incredible, I think.
They still work.
Yeah, they do. They really do. A couple of them, right? It's Super Bowl is interesting because it's, the stakes are so high. Usually people who take more risks, there's a reward there. You try to be safe, you get ignored on the crowd.
Yeah. So last question. Who else, you've been a great guest. Who else would you like to hear? You love podcasts. You love to learn. Who else would you like to hear on the CMO podcast?
You used to be a CMO?
No, anyone. we're going to have Scott Galloway on. Right. We're going to have thought leaders, mostly CMOs, but we'll mix it up.
Right. There are a couple of people, three people that comes to mind. They're great in their respective disciplines. Anselmo Ramos, now with Gut. Mm-hmm. He was with Dave Miami. This guy's a creative genius. Anselmo, not so much, but he is. I hope he's listening to that. I became close to Martin Lindstrom lately. Yeah. And Martin is really impressive in the way he thinks about culture and behavior. I would say those two guys.
Those two?
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I can call them if you want.
Okay, good. Excellent. Eduardo, thank you. It was a blast.
Jim. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So that was my conversation with Eduardo Lutz. What really, really affected me in this conversation was Eduardo's love of creativity, spontaneity, and being in touch with culture. I love his idea of bringing his creative partners into his office every Friday for ideas. Just give me ideas. Don't worry about budgets. Don't worry about timelines. I just want ideas every week on Friday that match the purpose of our brands. I think it's a brilliant idea. That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribe so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.